I'm Sheila Malcolmson. I'm Minister for Social Development and Poverty Reduction for British Columbia. I'm elected in Nanaimo, and I'm joining you from the BC Legislature, the territory of the Lekwungen-speaking people.
Would you tell me about the Critical Food Infrastructure Fund?
Really, such an encouraging program, and it was great for me being in the North just 10 days ago and getting a bit of a sense of how it's landing. You know, bottom line is we want people to have the support and the services that they need to be able to access healthy, nutritious food. And so this particular fund is $14 million so that community groups can build the kind of food security infrastructure that will help them redistribute free food at a time of really high costs. $5 million of that $15 million is specially designated for the North. And we are partnering with United Way. We're funding it, and they are the ones that are managing the distribution and the intake. Applications are open until November 20th. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's interested in finding out how this program works and whether they would be eligible for it, they can contact United Way directly, and they can work through their website on that.
Do you have any examples of projects that this funding has been used for?
The kind of projects that people will be, you know, might, you know, want in their communities and that this can help them fund. Big picture is it's for year-round access to food and the availability of nutritious and culturally appropriate food. It could be warehouse storage to receive and process and store and redistribute food to community members. It could be equipment to preserve and process food for extended food life. Refrigerated vehicles and trucks to transport food, and then investment in growing more food locally. That can include hunting, fishing, harvesting, gardening, shelter for animals. It's pretty broad.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple of other pools of money that we've been pushing out the door, just really recognizing, you know, how hard global inflation has hit people. And you know, notwithstanding a lot of new investments that we've put to put more money in people's pockets and build out affordable housing and raise social assistance rates and so many things we've been doing, the cost of food has really outstripped so much of that. So we've also funded money that we're working with Food Banks BC on that will directly help local food banks with just the cost of doing business. Also funded $15 million for a First Nations Wellbeing Fund that has projects included within it that relate to food security. We're working with First Nations Summit on that. And then we've also funded in a different project with United Way Food Hubs, which are kind of where community organizations that are cooperating together can get funding for that kind of infrastructure that links them together. And one of the terms of the funding is that we'll open one food hub in the North this year. And then one to two more in the next couple of years. So that work is ongoing in addition to this specific fund that you and I are talking about today.
Yeah, that's really exciting. A little teeny segue, I guess. Do you know where that food hub in the North is?
Those conversations are happening right now still. When I was in Prince George just a couple of weeks ago, this is very much a current topic. And so along, you know, together with United Way, we're focusing in on what community is the most ready and where we can start to generate results for people the fastest.
On the United Way granting application for the Critical Infrastructure Fund, it says that one of the aims of the program is to increase access to traditional and culturally preferable foods by supporting initiatives prioritizing Indigenous food sovereignty and regional self-determination. So can you tell me why is traditional and culturally preferable foods important to First Nations people?
You know, we've been talking to a lot of people over this last 9 months. We've been doing public engagement related to poverty reduction and food security across all British Columbia. We've had more than 10,000 inputs altogether as we're writing our next poverty reduction strategy. But specifically with the engagement with First Nations, we really heard a lot about food security being critical to self-determination and exercising food sovereignty. We heard a lot about the importance of relationships within food systems too, land and water, their impact on access to culture and health, identity, well-being, healthy, thriving ecosystems. And then we also heard also, you know, quite a bit about the need for improved and dignified access to nutritious and culturally safe food, especially for Indigenous people. So that feedback that we heard directly from Indigenous people has been, you know, turned into, well, funding that First Nations Wellbeing Fund that I mentioned. An example of a kind of scale of project through that fund, we gave $35,000 to the Chisalata Carrier Nation. And they're using that to promote local food security, build a community fish camp and a smokehouse, and teaching traditional food canning methods. So people that, you know, if anybody's listening that thinks that that fits them on the Indigenous food sovereignty side, then they could get in touch with First Nations Summit. We've given the money to them, and then they're administering it on our behalf so that it can get, you know, most directly to the people on the ground.
I've spoken with representatives in Smithers and Prince Rupert who work at Salvation Army kitchens. And one major concern in both locations is the uptick in users of the Salvation Army's soup kitchens and emergency hamper programs and the decrease in donations. So how is this fund going to help these small northern community organizations that are suffering that imbalance of people to help donations and money coming in versus how many people need to use their services?
Mm-hmm. So if those organizations wanted to invest in, say, refrigerator trucks so that when there's a grocery store or a trucking company that has a big load of food, you know, it could be like, I don't know, like sometimes it's like rack of lamb and cheese and sometimes like really fantastic fresh stuff, then that this critical food infrastructure fund would be for that kind of infrastructure. So they could apply for that. If what they are feeling is simply that they are just getting hit by the cost of operations, then in that case, they would want to turn to another fund that is active this year. We funded $15 million to Food Banks BC, and $5 million of that is designated against specifically for the North. So that's just like, you know, local food access projects developed by organizations in the North, setting up just, you know, simply getting support just for the cost of operations, food security networks. And then there's also some of that funding that is designated for wildfire and kind of emergency related response. So that's, again, another fund. And if anybody is, you know, feeling like, which of these do I turn to? It always just, I mean, Food Banks BC and United Way are coordinating really well. We don't want people to have to fill out multiple applications. It's really just about letting people know that support is there. And then my Office of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, we can always help folks navigating that system as well.
In 2018, the provincial government introduced a number of long-term strategies to tackle the needs of British Columbians, including its poverty strategy, Together BC, an affordable housing plan, wage increases, and an expert panel on basic income. What strategies are most vital to your office for battling poverty now, 5 years later?
So since the NDP took government in 2017, this has been a priority. At that time, British Columbia was the last place in the country to have a poverty reduction strategy. We brought that in, and then we're renewing it right now. We'll have a new strategy that we bring into the legislature this spring. So we've been hearing a lot from people just kind of currently about what worked for them and then what we need to do more of. We did have a goal in that first poverty reduction strategy of reducing poverty in BC by 25% across the board and then child poverty by 50%. And we did that. We exceeded those targets actually by, you know, a mix, you know, a real diversity of approaches. We increased assistance rates 5 times, including increasing the shelter rate payments for the first time in 16 years. Wow. We increased the minimum wage 5 times so that BC's is now the highest of any province. Brought in the BC family benefit, which used to be called, when we first announced it, it was the child opportunity benefit. Now it's the family benefit. And then just historic investments in childcare and affordable housing, all things that, you know, take the edge off the cost of living. But global inflation has just been such a hit that we know that there's a lot of people that are struggling. And so we're continuing to invest in people and continuing to look at how we can expand more programs like this in order to drive poverty rates down further again.
Yeah. Minister Malcolmson, what are the underlying reasons of the unaffordability crisis? And I'm speaking, you know, referring to the 2023 BC budget released.
Yeah. You know, the budget this spring, you know, continued our pattern of investing more in people and building up social infrastructure, building back that social safety net. But, you know, just everything that informed that budget and then is even truer now is just the terrible impact of global inflation. You know, even though we've put a lot more money in people's pockets and we've built a lot more affordable housing, there are, you know, 250,000 more people living here than there were 2 years ago, rising housing costs, rising food costs, you know, stretching household budgets. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, that, you know, inflationary impact just continues to have such a hit. So we're continuing to work to ease that pressure by putting more money in people's pockets, lowering the cost of childcare, lowering the cost of car insurance, you know, and continuing to do everything we can within provincial powers, given that we can't change global inflation, but we can, you know, build that path out of poverty by continuing to invest in social programs. Yeah. And continuing to invest in the employment programs as well that can help people that have been alienated from work get back into the job market. And if they're on social assistance, supplement that by starting to get back into the work field. So we're really trying to hit this from multiple fronts and really recognizing that we need to have a diversity of approaches. That's the system that we're building.
Yeah. So Food Banks BC and the Public Health Association of BC will support local food access projects developed by organizations from Northern BC. And in that, I'm referring to the Resilient North Research mm-hmm. Project. Can you tell me about that?
It was just so great. I was there in Prince George with Food Banks BC and PHABC. I got introduced to the Resilient North Research Project. It was really powerful to see people in the room in Prince George, you know, who have been really working together in a really strong way, just working shoulder to shoulder to support vulnerable people and just to do all the therapeutic impacts of food delivery, you know, how people will be less isolated, more connected, more healthy, but also just getting to know their neighbors better whether they're making food for others or whether they're sitting down for community meals. It was really encouraging to hear. So this project is funded through that $5 million that was designated for the North. We did kind of a seed money project into this research project, which was helping this Resilient North project, helping to identify local solutions that are appropriate and sustainable and scalable. And some of the outcomes of that research is what informed the designated $5 million for North specific projects under our Food Banks BC funding. So that, you know, kind of that next phase will be funding for the North local food access projects developed by organizations from Northern BC that understand the unique challenges that are faced by the rural, remote First Nations communities, the climate, the extra transportation challenges, all those things really mean, you know, what works in Surrey is just not going to work in PG. And so that's, you know, just really important for our government. We're also going to be setting up three regional food security networks of not-for-profits, businesses, all levels of governments, the agricultural sector, really collaborating to expand access to food. And then finally, expanding the research that Resilient North Research Project started to capture what are the unique needs of diverse groups, the seniors, immigrants, refugees, people of color, you know, ensuring that their voices and stories of accessing food programs are heard and are reflected in that food security system that we're working to build. Yeah. So really encouraging work and really, you know, raise my hands to the community members that, you know, took the time to show me what it is that they've built so far and what their optimism is about how they can build on that. And with our investment, really have that ability to connect more people with the affordable or free nutritious food and build community at the same time.
Yeah, that's so important too when you think about, you know, eating and is sharing too and making those connections while, you know, sharing or preparing food. It's just, it's so much more important than just feeding people.
Yeah, so much. You know, I get to meet volunteer, you know, people that have maybe retired, say a retired chef comes back, works in this community food project. More volunteers come because they hear, you know, he's really super charismatic and really knows how to put together, you know, who knows what's going to be donated by the grocery store. It's like, oh, tonight it's stuffed peppers. You know, that's pretty, you know, this like people really, really strengthening their community by working together for a really strong imperative and combating waste at the same time. You know, with some, there's some really great projects that bring together that environmental and social justice piece in a way that leaves people, you know, better off in the end at every way. So really, I'm really glad to be learning about these projects on the ground and really looking forward to getting back to visit next summer and see what the communities have been able to build with our support.
What are your thoughts on the poverty report cards that was just released by Food Banks Canada?
But, you know, we, you know, recognize that there are places where the Food Banks BC poverty report card, you know, says, yeah, BC is a leader, like investing in public housing, for example, a leader across the country. We're also the highest cost jurisdiction to live in. And so even though we've increased social assistance rates five times since we formed government, it still isn't enough in people's pockets to deal with the impacts of global inflation. So, you know, the findings of that report certainly consistent with what we're hearing on the ground. And that's why we are doing that work to review our poverty reduction strategy. I'm really grateful to the, you know, 10,000 people that gave us input on that. It'll affect what we table in the legislature this coming spring.
Thanks so much. And thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the conversation. Bye now.